Watching my father Kit die remains the most profoundly shocking experience of my life. He was 67, and although clearly dying of heart failure and obviously in great pain, Dad was assisted to die in the only way that Australia's laws then and now would allow. He was given ever-increasing doses of sedatives to settle the pain. Of course, morphine couldn't relieve his distress, not his and not ours. That was 19 years ago. In the years since, whenever I've talked about it, I've been struck by how many respond with similar stories about people they love dying slowly, in pain, and sometimes terror, while being denied proper medical help.
Andrew Denton, talking to the National Press Club there in support of physician-assisted suicide in August last year. Look, just in the last fortnight in the South Australian Parliament, law on assisted suicide, knockback. My guest this morning is Molly Carlisle. She's a grief specialist, a palliative care activist and author. She's also known as the death talker. Her motto, the more we talk, the less we fear. Molly, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Death talkers, that's a tricky thing to have on your business card.
Yeah, it is a bit tricky, but I do, you know, my background's so complicated and diverse. It just encapsulates everything.
We have death in a really strange spot socially, don't we?
We talk about how it takes a village to raise a child. And at the time when we need our village the most, when we're dying, our village disappears because people don't know what to say or what to do, so they run for the hills.
Such a strange thing when it's, as I say, it's the one absolute certainty in your life.
It is, and I think the primary reason is that people are anxious because they do push it to the background. They don't have informed conversations. They don't know what questions to ask, so they don't ask questions. And then you get an experience, like I can empathise with Andrew Denton's view about his and the impact of his father's death. But having said that, I can also say that I've looked after hundreds and hundreds of people as they've died, and they've died comfortable, well-supported, calm and relaxed deaths.
Now, tell us about this notion. I mean, this is the palliative care activist side of your many-faceted character, Molly, comes into play here. I mean, explain that idea to us.
From my perspective, I've worked in palliative care for nearly 30 years, and I think we have a number of problems in the sector. Primarily, people don't know what palliative care is. They don't want to know about it until they need it. And often what happens is specialist palliative care providers aren't involved in the care of the person until they're actively dying. So you can't get in there and do preparatory work that helps people to live well until their death if we're not involved in the equation.
What's that preparatory work? I mean, and when does that start?
Well, it needs to start as soon as someone gets a diagnosis of a terminal illness, whether that be cancer or heart disease or renal disease or whatever it is. If palliative care is involved at that point, then you can start having conversations with the family about, you know, what capacity there is, you know, who's going to need extra support. You can talk to the person themselves about where they want to die, how they want to die, what the things that matter in their life are, and how we can keep them living their lives, doing the things that are meaningful to them for as long as possible.
And if what they want is an assisted suicide, what's your view on that?
Well, look, I've got to say I see death and dying as an enormous jigsaw. And there's a whole lot of pieces. You know, it's a 1,000-piece jigsaw. There's one piece that everyone's focusing on, and that's the physician-assisted dying piece, to the detriment of the 999 other pieces that we currently have available to us, but that A, people don't know about, and B, people don't know how to access. So if good palliative care is put in place from the get-go, the need for that final piece of the jigsaw may not be as urgent as people think it is. At the minute, physician-assisted dying is illegal. So we work within a legal framework. If that changes, well, then we need to explore that at that time. But we have all of this capacity now that people aren't using already. So let's turn the attention onto that and try and get people hooked into palliative care services earlier in their illness.
Molly Carlisle's our guest here on Sunday Extra. She's a grief specialist, a new book out. It's about death and dying. It's called The Death Talker. You said this at the beginning of our chat, Molly, that it's about having this conversation. It's about getting death on the table of us approaching it with an open mind and I guess making plans.
Well, look, Jonathan, from my perspective, it needs to go right back to the beginning. We need to be talking about death in primary school, in secondary school. Mortality needs to be addressed in all undergraduate health professional education, which currently it isn't. Mm. We need to be talking to our kids about death before anyone ever gets sick, because as soon as you've got someone that you love who is going to die sooner than you'd thought, there's a level of trauma and anxiety around that removes people's ability to think laterally about mortality. So we need to talk about it before anyone's sick.
Is it tough for the medical profession? So much of this conversation seems to fly in the face of the sort of the doctors wanting to, you know, we'll keep you alive. This is what we do. And yet, obviously, that ultimately is not a thing that they can achieve.
And look, Jonathan, at the minute, I think the more urgent issue is around futile treatment. So from my perspective, you know, people who have a carrot dangled in front of them just have one more round of chemo, one more lot of dialysis, whatever it is, when the healthcare team know that that's not going to do anything to change this person's circumstances. And in fact, the side effects can often be more detrimental to their quality of life. I think that's something we need to be talking about first.
And if we had that first conversation you're talking about, you know, going back to when we're young people about the idea of mortality, then facing that decision, well, look, you know, things are not good here, and what we're going to now do is ease your path in these next few months, then that perhaps is easier to accept.
Well, and it's about trying to get that quality of life piece in there, you know. So everybody is different. So my idea of quality of life will be totally different to yours. Mm. And if we're not having those conversations with people, we make assumptions based on our own frame of reference that may be quite alien to the person that we're working with. So the earlier conversations happen, the more we get to know the people that we're working with, the better we can assist them in achieving what it is they want to achieve in the time that they have left. And that may be something as simple as creating a piece of art that they want to leave for their family, or sharing stories about their own parents, or going on a trip somewhere.
And is our the medical apparatus around death, is it adequate now in that way, in your view?
I think there's a disconnect in health. I can't speak on behalf of doctors because I'm not one, but I am a nurse and I am a psychologist, so I can speak from those perspectives. And I think there is so much emphasis on healthcare professionals to pursue cure at all cost that they sometimes see their inability to cure as being a personal failure. And it's not their failure, it's the failure of the system in preparing them for the fact that everybody will eventually die, and people will die on your watch, and your job is to make sure that they are comfortable, that they are supported, that they have the people around them who they want there, that they die in the place that they choose to die. That may be at home, that may be in a hospice, it may be in an acute facility or a residential care facility. But at the minute, what happens is those conversations, when they don't happen, an elderly person who wants to die in their facility that they've lived in for the last 10 years suddenly takes a turn for the worst, and the staff ring the ambulance and they end up dying in the back of the ambulance or in the emergency department, and that's the last place they want to be.
Molly, thank you. We need clearly to talk more and more about this. It's not a thing that we necessarily should fear, and perhaps talking more would remove some of that anxiety from it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jonathan.
The Death Talker, out now, and the author, Molly Carlisle. She's a grief specialist, a palliative care activist and author. This is Sunday Extra here on RN.